Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is October 23rd, 2017, or it is Bull 4, 2023. We start our first service today with a song entitled, In the Garden. I come to the garden of the Lord. All the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear calling on my ear, the sound of Yah is closing, and He walks with me and He talks with me. And He tells me I am His own, and the joy we share as we carry them, none of it has ever known. Speaks that the sound of His voice is so sweet, the birds hush their singing, and the melody that He gave to me within my heart is ringing, and He walks with me and He talks with me. And He tells me I am His own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, out here as a friend known. I stay in the garden with Him, though the night around me be falling, but He bids me go to the voice of woe. His voice to me is calling, and He walks with me and He talks with me. And He tells me I am His own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none of it has ever known. Part 3, 144,000, What Kind of Seal Is It? Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 26. References made in testimonies under ministers, page 445, for the subject is about the sealing of the Revelation 7, the 144,000, we quote, this sealing of the servants of Yahweh is the same that was shown under Ezekiel in the vision, and as the sealing of the 144,000 of the Revelation 7 is the same as Ezekiel 9, in order to find the kind of sealing it is, in the time of its beginning, we must study Ezekiel 9, 1 to 9. He cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lieth toward the north, and every man his slaughter weapon in his hand. And one man among them was clothed with a linen, with a writer's ink horn by his side, and they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. And the glory of the Yahweh of Israel was gone up from the cherub, whereupon he was unto the threshold of the house. And he called unto the man clothed with the linen, which had the writer's ink horn by his side. And Yahweh said unto him, go to the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh, and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. And unto the others he said in mine hearing, go you after him through the city, and smite, let not your eyes spare. Neither have you pity, slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children, and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. And they begin at the ancient men which were before the house. And he said unto them, defile the house, and fill the courts with the slain. Go ye forth, and they went forth and slew in the city. And it came to pass, while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face, and cried and said, O Yahweh Elohim, wilt thou destroy all the residue of Israel, and thou pouring out of thy fury upon Jerusalem? Then said ye unto me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceeding great. It is positive that the seed of the 144,000 is Ezekiel 9. The separation, sifting in the church, the righteous from the unrighteous, volume 1, page 181. I asked the meaning of the shaking I had seen, and was shown that it would be caused by the straight testimony called forth by the counsel of the true witness unto the letter of sin. Read the entire page. Note the shaking begins after the straight testimony of the true witnesses come. The two seals is the Sabbath. It seals the 144,000. First of all, it will be noticed that the definition of the seal is an instrument which is used to seal, fasten up, or enclose securely, to establish or settle beyond question, to point out and determine, designate. An effort will be made to bring forth enough Bible evidence to satisfy anyone believing in the Scriptures that all who were saved in the ages past, as well as those who are to be saved now, must have the seal of Yahweh. Paul, in his letter unto the Ephesians, said that they were to be sealed. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of Yahweh, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of the redemption. Ephesians 4:30. The grace of the sanctification wrought in the soul by the Holy Spirit is the seal and assurance of one's redemption to come of a joyful resurrection. For the use and end of this sealing is the sacredness and safety of the thing sealed from the eyes of the ferocity and hands of the violence, which otherwise would be abused by the strangers and enemies. Thus the children of Yahweh are past the censure of the wicked world. They are preserved as precious things for Yahweh's own use, to be with Him in heaven. According to 2 Timothy 2:19, written unto the Corinthians, nevertheless, the foundation of Yahweh standeth sure, having this seal, the Yahweh knoweth them that are His, who hath also sealed us and given us the earnest of the Spirit of our hearts. 2 Corinthians 1:22. We read in Revelation 8 and 9 of the seven angels with the seven trumpets. These seven trumpets indicate the principal political and warlike events which were to transpire during the time of the, it's called Gospel Church. We should say a typical apostolic Nazarene congregation of the apostles and their followers. The seed of the 144,000 belongs to the time of the sixth trumpet. But how in the world was V.T. Holliff able to come up with that conclusion back during the 10th hour? Inspiration wasn't given to him to put a timeline except on the seven seals. And he only put a timeline on the first six seals. The seventh seal he didn't know. He thought he knew. So actually he had a timeline through the sixth seal, but that's all. And then he had the sixth seal wrong. He believed the sixth seal closed in 1930. And the seventh seal opened then. He believed Ezekiel 9 kicked in 1930. Man, he was probably close to 100 years removed from the timeline on all this stuff. But anyway, he comes along here about 1930, and he's saying, the seal of the 144,000 belongs to at the time of the sixth trumpet, beginning with Revelation 9. Okay, let's put it this way. The sixth trumpet sounded at the ending, before the ending of the sixth seal. The sixth seal closed in 2002. So the sixth trumpet had to sound sometime several years before. Because it's a trumpet of warning to listen to the message of the inspired messenger that Yahweh sends to you. That's what the message, that's what the trumpets are. They're trumpets of warning, but they have a message. But who bears that message? The angel that blows the trumpet doesn't bear that message. But he gives that message to his servant here on earth that has inspiration, his messenger. And his messenger gives it to the congregation. And at first he gives it to the leader of the congregation, the minister, or the prophet, or the... In our case, the Gilead Center, it was me giving the message to Rodas W. Johnson. Beginning with Revelation 9, we read about the angel with the fifth trumpet. Verse 4 of this chapter we quote, "And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, and neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of the Yahweh in their forehead." Here we see that many years before the third angel's message ever began to be preached, the saints of Yahweh were sealed with the seal of Yahweh, just the same as the ones under the third angel's message are to be sealed. According to these scriptures, which are plainly stated, we must conclude that the saints of Yahweh are sealed with the present truth in all ages. And whatever that present truth is, that is the seal. Alright, so that's what you're sealed with. Whenever you make from one step into the next step, the higher step, when you accept present truth, it means that you put the extra oil in your vessel, and as the time ends for this one movement, then the next movement begins, you have a judgment, you have a sealing to close out the old one, and the sealing is to seal those that accept the new truth. That's what they're sealed by. And whatever that present truth is, that is the seal. Present truth under the third angel's message is the Sabbath truth. Therefore, the Sabbath is a seal which seals the people who are obedient unto it. Quoting Great Controversy, page 452, "The seal of Yahweh's law is found in the fourth commandment, when the Sabbath was changed by the papal power. The seal was taken from the law," early writings, page 58. "The sealing time is very short and will soon be over. Those who died under the third angel's message keeping the Sabbath are sealed with the Sabbath truth. Let the 144,000 never die. While they must keep Sabbath and have that seal, they must sign and cry for the abominations that are in the Seventh-day Adventist congregation, for otherwise they cannot receive the mark by the angel with the writer's inkhorn of Ezekiel 9, which is the seal according to the testimony of the ministers," page 445, volume 5, pages 22, 10, and 16, volume 3, pages 266 and 7. The sealing of the 144,000 is a separation of the faithful from the disloyal one, the purification of the church, those who do not keep the truth and indulge in the sins and abominations, who try to throw a cloak over the existing evils which fall under the figure of the five men with the slaughter weapons of Ezekiel 9. Now I have some new insight here. B.T. Hardoff had the inspiration back in 1930 to believe that the sixth seal had closed and that the seventh seal had opened up, and that they were in the 11th hour was the last hour, that they was in the last hour, they was in the judgment time of Ezekiel 9. And after reading about where he says you're sealed with present truth in every time zone that you live in, and every angel, these five angels, they have a time zone allotted to each one of them. And as you accept the truth of these angels that are present truth, then you're sealed in that time zone that they came in. So it come time for the fourth and fifth angel to be revealed in 1930. B.T. Hardoff accepted the fourth and fifth angel in 1930. He revealed where that fourth and fifth angel had been rejected by the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventist leadership for the Adventists in 1890, after they rejected Jones and Wagner, Righteousness by Faith, the Three Angels Message. So they were shown where they rejected that, and so they rejected the seal of the third angel and that sixth trumpet. That sixth trumpet was blowing. That sixth trumpet started blowing. The sixth seal started far as I'm concerned, with William Miller, 1833. Now, it may have started earlier. B.T. Hall's talk like it started maybe in 1755 with the Lisbon earthquake. But anyway, Adventists were in the sixth seal. And they were, and the sixth trumpet was present. If William Miller was in the sixth seal, then the sixth trumpet sounded in 1844, warning with the Millerites to accept this new message of 1844 by the Adventists. When they rejected it, Sister White says, William Miller was sealed. If that be the case, then the sixth trumpet didn't sound then in 1844. But if the sixth trumpet sounded, and he rejected the Advent message to move on and alert the 50,000 that's following him to move on with him, then they were lost. They weren't sealed. And Sister White talks about a whole generation's being lost. That could very well be. Whenever 1850 sounded, the birth of testimony, that started another 40-year period, or that started the first 40-year period for the Adventist, called a generation. From 1850 to 1890 was the period for Bation, the first feeding pastor for the Adventist, the first step of the genuine movement of the Adventist. Yahweh sent two messengers, Jones and Wagner, with a message of righteousness by faith. That angel of Revelation 18:1 had come down to lighten the whole earth with his glory. Did that angel come down? Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And he had that message to lighten the whole earth with his glory. And what was that message? The fourth and fifth angel's message. It's time for the third angel. His time period was up. Because the prophecy in Ezekiel 4, that 390-year prophecy, 390 days, that was... prophecy was from 1500 to 1890. 1890 marked the prophetic time period for the end of the first feeding pasture of Bashan for the Advent. It marked also the end of the first 40-year period of antitypical Moses' time, when Moses was in the palace of the king. So we've got three different places that we can prove that 1890 was the closing out of the third angel's message. Only with a loud voice, not a loud cry. Loud voice. Loud voice message is given to the Adventist congregation only. The loud cry goes to the world. Well, Yahshua is that angel that is mentioned there. Revelation 7 is ascending from the east. He is that angel that gives seals 144,000 with the loud voice, because they're in the Adventist Church. They're not worldwide. They've been gathered worldwide into the Adventist Church. They're called out of the Adventist Church to be sealed because they accepted the new light that came to them. They believed it, and so they were sealed by it. Then when the General Conference leadership, those Jesuit leaders that were not Adventists to begin with, they were not even of the House of Israel to begin with, they were not genealogically bloodline descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Moses, and David. They were not, they didn't filter down through that lineage. They came out of Babylon. They came out of heathen nations. Those Jesuits that took over the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists in 1890, they were not Israelites. They were not true descendants of the seed of Abraham through the chosen people, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, David, Yahshua at the cross. They didn't come through that bloodline. And today, the bloodline that's in command is the tribe of Judah. So, V.T. Hallock then was given inspiration on Ezekiel 9 in 1930. And according to what he says, and I believe what he says, that when he says you're sealed by the present truth, not by the complete truth that comes at the end. You're only sealed by the present truth that comes to you and its time. So, 1930 began of the judgment of the living for the Adventist. The judgment of the living began for the Adventists in 1890, but not for the world. It began for the Adventists. And they reject that message. Those who reject the message of Jones and Ryder, they were judged while they were still living. They were cut off while they were still living. That's the judgment of the living. 1930, those that didn't accept V.T. Hallis' message, they were cut off by the judgment of the living. V.T. Hallis accepted and taught exactly what he was told to teach for 25 years. He died, even though he didn't realize his dreams of bringing forth 144,000 like he thought was supposed to come forth in that time. But because he had one misconception, and that was where we were at a stream of time. He thought we were in the last hour, and he thought the last hour was the 11th hour. And indeed, he was in the 10th hour and didn't know it. He called the Adventist 9th hour laborers. He did call them that in White House Recruiter, but nevertheless, he didn't know how to read the time clock because the 9th hour was given to William Miller. The 7th, 8th, and 9th hour was to William Miller, only covered a 10-year prophetic period from 1833 to 1844. But since the fourth group of laborers, Matthew 20, verse 5, was called at the 9th hour, it's automatically assumed that the Adventists were 9th hour laborers. Yeah, they were called at the end of the 9th hour. And indeed, those that accepted the Adventist message in 1844 had gotten their training in the 9th hour under William Miller as First Day Adventists. That's how come they had the extra oil to step into the 1844 movement. It was the fact that they accepted William Miller's message from 1833 to 1844. So, when V.T. Hallis died, the little flock scattered, and those that continued on believing in the rod message of the V.T. Hallis, and followed to the best of their ability, they were sealed with V.T. Hallis. But whenever, 15 years later, 1970, when the rod period was over and they rejected the new messenger with the new message, Brother Stephen Johnson, and that was a Roden knife they had taken over from V.T. Hallis in 1955 or 1960, when they rejected Brother Stephen Johnson, they were cut off. They didn't get the seal. They didn't get the seal of the shepherd's rod that was from 1930 to 1970. The Rodenites, that whole generation was lost. That whole generation. So it's quite talking about whole generations being lost. Well, that whole generation of the Rodens and their followers were lost. Every last one. So that's where that comes in at. Brother W. Johnson then takes over in 1970. With new light, new truth, and the third step of the genuine movement of Seventh-day Adventists. And for 33 and a half years, he operated as a leader. In his 32nd year, he was given messages for a whole year to repent and accept this new truth that was brought to him by the Elijah David, and he rejected it. And all those that followed Brother Stephen Johnson that were living there at Kermit, Texas, all those that followed stayed with him, that whole generation was lost. That whole generation, including those that are living today, and that's his sons and his family that's living today, they're all lost. They're all walking dead people. They don't have the seal of present truth. And so when the sixth trumpet finally sounded for the last time, that sixth trumpet started sounding in 1844 to the Millerites. And it sounded in 1890 for the Adventists. It sounded in 1930 for the Adventists. It sounded in 1970 for the Davidian Adventists, the Rodenites. It sounded in 2002, 2003 for Gilead Center. That sixth trumpet made its last final blowing and closing out the 11th parabolic hour and the last feeding pasture for the Adventists, and open up the seventh seal, close out the judgment of the dead, open up the judgment of the living. There you have it. Okay, that's a lot said about that. It says, let's continue with our reading. We're in Shepherd's Rod, Volume 1, we're on page 29. It says, for the Sabbath has been present truth since 1845, and being the seal of the law of Yahweh, and it's a seal, has been the seal in the law among the people of Yahweh ever since that year. What do you mean, seal in the law? Not just the law of the Ten Commandments, it's seal in the law of Moses. Because the law of Moses had to be developed and restored because it represents the foundation for the sanctuary system in full operation, not just for the seventh-day Sabbath. Isaiah 8:16, bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples. This has been the work of the third angel. And for this reason, the third angel has no seal, for the seal is in the law. That the angel of the Revelation 7 has a seal in his hand. Now this is double talk right here. This is double talk. I'm going to read that again. This has been the work of the third angel. And for this reason, the third angel has no seal. Well, no, he doesn't have the seal for the fourth and fifth angel. But he certainly has a seal for the third angel. Because how else... Who were those Adventists that stayed with Ellen G. White and accepted John Wagner in 1888 and 1890? What seal were they sealed by? They were sealed with the third angel seal, which they showed that they were Sabbath keepers and accepting all the truth that the three angels taught up to 1890. So the fourth and fifth angel seal, though, is in the hand of that angel sent from the east, which is Yahshua. He's that fourth angel. It says, for the seal is in the law, but the angel of Revelation 7 has a seal in his hand. Well, this is Yahshua himself. Ezekiel calls him the man with the writer's ink on, who is to set a mark upon the men who sigh and cry for all the abomination to be done in the midst thereof in the Seventh-day Adventist congregation. And so this man in linen, white linen, Ezekiel didn't say he was in white linen here, but the Bible says he has white linen on, which is what the priests wear, and Yahshua is definitely a priest, and so that white linen identifies him as a priest in the sanctuary. This is the seal of the 144,000, but all the saved under the third angel are sealed with the Sabbath seal. For the 144,000 having this seal are also marked sealed by the angel of Revelation 7, which is the same as the one of Ezekiel 9. In other words, it may be termed a double seal. All right, so it says, 144,000 having this seal are also marked or sealed by the angel of Revelation 7, which is the same as the one of Ezekiel 9. In other words, it may be termed a double seal. Well, that may be. I'm not going to discount that, but nevertheless, that's not the most important thing that we should understand. The seal represents Sabbath keepers. I mean, seal Sabbath keeper. If you're not a seventh-day Sabbath keeper, if you're not a Sabbath keeper of all the law of Moses, all of the holy days in Leviticus 23, the Unleavened Bread Day, which is the Passover, the first and last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, those are holy days. Those are called Sabbath day. Pentecost is called a Sabbath day. New Moon comes 12 times a year. It's called Sabbath. You have the Atonement called the Sabbath day, the cleansing of the sanctuary, once a year. You have the Feast of Tabernacles. First day and the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles are holy Sabbath days. There's 70 holy Sabbath days within a year. So your seal, when those Sabbath days have been restored, you're sealed by those Sabbath days. You're sealed by them. So how do you know if you're sealed? If you're faithfully keeping all these Sabbath days, according to Isaiah 58, and I'm going to read that to you, just keeping these holy days don't give you the seal. You have to be sanctified by keeping them. And if you're sanctified by keeping them, you keep it the way the Bible tells you to keep it. And so I'm going to turn to Isaiah 58 now. First, you've got to get synchronized with the daily. It comes twice a day. You've got to get synchronized with it. You've got to remember them as sacred hours of the day. These are the time that Yahshua chooses. These are His divine appointments that He chooses to meet with you at these appointed times. So we need not Once we learn to do that and establish that in our homes, we need not get lax on that. Because Yahweh doesn't overlook anything. It says in Isaiah 58, cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sin. Yet they seek me daily, and delight to know my ways, as a nation that did righteousness, and forsook not the ordinance of their Elohim. They ask of me the ordinance of justice, they take delight in approaching unto Yahweh. He's talking about the house of Israel, the Seventh-day Adventist Church today. Wherefore have we fasted, say they, and thou seest not? Wherefore have we afflicted our soul, and thou takest no knowledge? Behold, in the day of your fast you find a pleasure, and exact all your labors. Behold, you fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. Ye shall not fast as ye do this day, to make your voice be heard on high. Is it such a fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush, and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Wilt thou call this a fast and an acceptable day to Yahweh? Is not this the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burden, and to let the oppressed go free, and that ye break every yoke? Is it not to deal thy bread unto the hungry, and that thou bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? When thou seest the naked, that thou cover him, and that thou hide not thyself from thine own flesh? Then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thine health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee. The glory of Yahweh shall be thy reward. Then shalt thou call, and the Yahweh shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, Here I am. If thou take away from the midst of thee the yoke, the putting forth of the finger, and speak in vanity, and if thou draw out thy soul into the hungry, and satisfy the afflicted soul, then shall thy light rise in obscurity, and thy darkness be as the noonday. And the Yahweh shall guide thee continually, and satisfy thy soul in drought, and make fat thy bones, and thou shalt be like a watered garden, and like a spring of water, whose waters fail not. And they that shall be of thee shall build the old waste places. Thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations, and thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in. The members then of this kingdom that are following the leader, they are the ones that are called upon to raise up with their finances, with all of whatever is needed to raise up the foundation. And then thou shalt be, and they that be of thee, those that be of thee, shall build the old waste places. In other words, we're going to have carpenters and plumbers, and we're going to have everybody, workers with every talent in the world, just like David had in his day, and like Solomon had whenever it was time for him to build the temple. He called on all of those that David had made friends with around in all the countries surrounding Israel. Solomon called on them, and boy, he got kings from nations, heathen nations come. They brought their material, they brought their wood, they brought their metals, and they brought their ivory and gold and silver and brass and iron, and they came. And they put their skill to the task, and they helped build the old waste place, because it is indeed a barren waste place. And when they got through, it was a replica of the kingdom of heaven right here on earth. So this is what Yahweh is calling up to do again. It says this last kingdom is going to be greater than Solomon's kingdom. Well, Beit Yahweh talked like it's because it's a spiritual kingdom. I know. Let me tell you something. This is real stuff. If that was the way it was done in the type, if Yahweh would make the type in reality after the pattern of heaven with Solomon building it, if that was done after the pattern of heaven and it actually happened, And that tabernacle in the wilderness, the temple, was the tabernacle of service, where they did the animal sacrifice. In the wilderness, that was a type of the temple that Solomon raised up with all his glory. One of the seven wonders of the world. Well, it's going to be in the antitype the same way. You're going to be mildly surprised at what's going to happen here in this end time. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath and doing thy pleasure on my holy day and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy Yahweh honorable, and shalt honor him not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in Yahweh, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father. For the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. All right, back to Shepherd's Rod, Volume 1, page 29. We're on the subject. Ezekiel 9 is not a Sabbath seal. For this sealing of the 144,000 is not a Sabbath seal. Well, it is a Sabbath seal. It's the sealing of 70 Sabbath. Let's see. Well, the 7-day Sabbath is 52 times a year. So, okay. There's 70 holy days in a year. Those that keep all 70 of those holy days. There's 52 seventh-day Sabbaths. There's 12 new moon Sabbaths. And then there are six other Sabbaths that are done once a year. Okay. Now let's count those. Seventh-day Sabbath. New moon Sabbath. Unleavened bread Sabbath. Let's do this again. Ezekiel 9 is not a Sabbath seal. This sealing of the 144,000 is not a Sabbath seal. However, those who are sealed must be Sabbath keepers. Okay, well now that in a way makes sense. Because I guarantee the Sabbath has a seal in it. It is a seal or a mark that separates the two classes in the church. Okay? Okay, so now this Ezekiel 9's marking is the same thing as this angel from the east with a sealing in Revelation 7, verse 4 of the 144,000. It is a seal or a mark that separates the two classes in the church. Okay. So it says, and those who are sealed or marked are not marked because they keep the Sabbath only, but because they sigh and cry for all the abominations that be done in the Seventh-day Adventist congregation. Be seen how that Carmel, Shepherd Rod, and Gilead Center, Branch Davidians were daughters of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, so this includes them as well. So both the sealing and the slaughter are in the Yahweh's congregation and not in the Babylon or in the world. It is only in Jerusalem and Judah. Okay. So, Brother Johnson being the angel of the seventh candlestick, and he was presiding over the 12 tribes of Israel, the 144,000, and the Adventist church, because he had the message for them. He had the sanctuary restored for them to be sealed by. Sanctuary has to be restored before you can have a marking and sealing. The house of Israel, the congregation, period. Judah in Ezekiel 9:9 refers to those in office, for Judah occupied the office of the Levites. Okay. For Judah occupied the office of the Levites after the tribe of the Levi was carried away. There is not a thought about the world or the unrighteous. When the marking ceiling is finished, the five men with the slaughter weapons began with the ancient men which were before the house. Meaning the guardians of the spiritual interest of the people. Volume 3, page 266 to 267. And Volume 5, page 210 to 212. We quote Volume 5, page 211, for the ancient men, those unto whom Yahweh had given great light and who had stood as the guardians of the spiritual interest of the people, and betrayed their trust. They had taken the position that we need not look for the miracles and the mark and manifestation of Yahweh's power as in the former day. Time has changed. These words strengthen their unbelief. And they say, Yahweh will not do good, neither will he do evil. He is too merciful to visit his people in the judgment. Volume 3, page 265. But if the sins of the people are passed over, now those in the responsible position, his frown will be upon them, and the people of Yahweh as a body will be held responsible for those sins. So those who are sealed, marked, and escape the ruin are the ones who will constitute the number which the prophecy declares to be the 144,000. Denomination and numbers about 300,000. This means the denomination will be divided in half and suggests that the 10 virgins, 5 of whom were wise and 5 were foolish. So now back in about 1930, the Adventist Church had a number about 300,000 members. May Yahweh help his people and give us a vision of what sin is, that we may put away the existing disastrous iniquity in the church, the house of Yahweh. And what was that part of that iniquity? That was the celebration of the Christmas and the birthday. Okay. Such a vision would cause us to sigh and cry for the abominations that are done in the midst of. So in 2002, my wife and I had a vision about the abomination which constituted idolatry in the congregation. And lo and behold, we were shown that we were participators in practicing idolatry at Gilead Center along with the whole congregation, including the pastor and his wife. Such a vision would cause us to sigh and cry for the abominations that are done in the midst of. He who understands the curse of sin would throw no cloak over the existing evil to obtain the favor of any. May Yahweh lift us from the low spiritual level into which we have fallen and save us from this latest sin lukewarm condition. May we, as the wise Nineveh of old, defeat the prophecy that the heaven may rejoice. Sealing begins when the church is at a low ebb. It is evident that if both the sealing and the slaughter are in the house of the Yahweh, the church, his people, and so that started at the headwaters of Gilead Center in 2002, Ezekiel 9, and if more than one half of the people must perish for their sins except they repent, and if less than one half of the present membership would number 144,000, it certainly could not have begun many years ago, and much less with the beginning of the third angel's message, for there was no church then, but merely a handful of people. It could not have begun when the church was in a good spiritual condition. It must have begun when the church is at her lowest ebb and polluted with sin. Well, we witnessed the church at her lowest ebb in 2002. we got down to less than 20 people in the congregation. And when it was all over with, only three escaped the burning inferno. And then we lost one of those three since then. Those who are to receive the seal and escape the slaughter must sign and cry for all the abominations that is done in the mystery of. Volume 8, page 350 says, unless the church, which has now been leavened with her own backsliding, shall repent and be converted, she will eat of the fruit of her own doing until she shall abhor herself. Well, we witnessed that happening where 15 years ago. Speaking of the 144,000, volume 5, page 210 to 11, says, these signed, crying ones had been holding forth the words of love, a message. They had reproved, counseled, and entreated. Some who had been dishonoring Yahweh repented and humbled their hearts before him. But the glory of the Yahweh had departed from Israel, although many still continued the forms of the religion. His power and presence were lacking. In this time when his wrath shall go forth into judgment, these humble, devoted followers of Yahshua will be distinguished from the rest of the world by the soul anguish which is expressed in the lamentation and weeping reproof and warnings, while others try to throw a cloak over the existing evil and excuse the great wickedness everywhere prevalent. Those who have a real zeal for the Yahweh's honor and a love for the souls will not hold their peace to obtain favor of any. They lament and afflict their souls because pride, avarice, selfishness, and deception of almost every kind are in the church. For the class who do not feel grieved over their own spiritual declension, nor mourn over the sins of the others, will be left without the seal of Yahweh. Here we see that the church, the Yahweh's sanctuary, was the first to feel the stroke of the wrath of Yahweh. And for the ancient men, those unto whom Yahweh had given great light, and who had stood as the guardians of the spiritual interests of the people, had betrayed their trust. Volume 5, page 82. The call to this great and solemn work was presented unto the men of the learning and position. Had these been a little in their own eyes and trusted fully in the Yahweh, he would have honored them with the bearing his standard in triumph unto the victors. But they separated from Yahweh, yielded to the influence of the world, and the Yahweh rejected them. Volume 5, page 211 to 12. They had taken the position that we need not look for the miracles and the marked manifestations of the Yahweh's power as in the former days. Times have changed. These words strengthen their unbelief, and they say the Yahweh will not do good, neither will he do evil. He is too merciful to visit his people in judgment. Thus peace and safety is a cry from men who will never again lift up their voice like a trumpet to show Yahweh's people their transgressions and the house of Jacob their sin. These dumb dogs that would not bark are the ones who feel the just vengeance of an offended Yahweh. Men, maidens, and little children all perish together. For the abominations for which the faithful ones were sighing and crying were all that could be discerned by the finite eye. But by far the worst sins, those which provoked the jealousy of the pure and the holy Yahweh, were unrevealed. Our own course of the action will determine whether we shall receive the seal of the living Yahweh or be cut down by the destroying weapon. If we were to mark out the exact time of the beginning of this sealing, we would say, it began sometime during 1929. Space will not permit us here to give our reason for believing thus. But in another study, will be taken up. To get the proper understanding of the third angel's message, we shall divide it into three periods. Beginning of the proclamation of the true Sabbath, Revelation 14:6-11. Number two, reformation and sealing of the 144,000, Revelation 7:1-8. And number three, the loud cry, the Revelation 18:1. Now keep in mind that when we talk about the three angels' message, we're talking about delivered with a loud voice only to the Adventist church. Whatever message the three angels were about, they were confined totally to the Adventist church. But the loud cry is for the whole world. And it is to be given by the 144,000. After the truth is seen, the 144,000 being made known, it is evident that we are in the second period. If we had not known the commencement of the third angel's message in its beginning, we would have no message. Therefore, we must know the time of the last two periods when they came, being of no lesser importance. For the 144,000, okay, that's the topic of our study. We're on page 33 of Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, and our new title for our new topic is Cause of Sign and Crime. And it says, Volume 5, pages 10 and 11. In the time when his wrath shall go forth into judgment, these humble, devoted followers of Yahshua will be distinguished from the rest of the world by their soul anguish, which is expressed in the lamentation and weeping, reproofs and warnings, while others try to throw a cloak over the existing evil and excuse the great wickedness everywhere prevalent. Those who have a zeal for Yahweh's honor and a love for souls will not hold their peace to obtain favor of any. Your righteous souls are vexed day by day with the unholy works and conversations of the unrighteous. They are powerless to stop the rushing torrent of the iniquity, and hence they are filled with the grief and alarm. They mourn before Yahweh to see religion despised in the very homes of those who have had great love. They lament and afflict their souls because pride, avarice, selfishness, and deception of almost every kind are in the Seventh-day Adventist midst. The Spirit of the Yahweh, which prompts for the reproof, is trampled under the foot, while the servants of the Satan triumph, for the Yahweh is dishonored. The truth makes of none effect, for the abomination for which the faithful ones were sighing and crying were all that could be discerned by the finite eyes, but by far the worst sin, those which provoked the jealousy of the pure and holy Yahweh, were unrevealed. Volume 1, page 471-472. A great mistake has been made by some who profess present truth. By the introducing merchandise in the course of a series of meetings, and by the traffic diverting minds from the object of the meeting, it is written, "My house shall be called a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves." These traffickers might have pleaded as an excuse that the articles they held for sale were for sacrificial offering, but their object was to get gain, to obtain means, to accumulate. Ministers have stood in the desk and preached in most solemn discord, and then by the introduction of the merchandise and acting the part of a salesman, even in the house of Yahweh, they have diverted the minds of their hearers from the impression received and destroyed the fruit of their labor. Their time and strength should be held in reserve, that their efforts may be thorough in a series of meetings. Their time and strength should not be drawn upon to sell our books when they can be properly brought before the public by those who have not the burden of the preaching the word. Volume 8, page 250. we can truthfully say our goal, who can truthfully say our goal is tied in the fire? Our garments are unspotted by the world. I saw our instructor pointing to the garments of the so-called righteousness, stripping them off. He laid bare the defilement beneath. Then he said unto me, can you not see how they have pretentiously covered up their defilement and rottenness of character? How has the faithful city become unhearted? My father's house has made a house of merchandise, a place whence the divine presence and glory have departed. Well, that's the same thing that is at Gilead Center. The road is before Gilead Johnson. They made Yahweh's house a house of merchandise, and that they were practicing false religion, false doctrine, and so forth. For this cause there is weakness and strength is lacking. And how do you prove that the Rhodians, for instance, were practicing all this the false way? They had the wife invented a false religion of the female Holy Spirit, and Ben Rhodian created a false religion of the restoration of the sanctuary his own way, and so he died a horrible death. And his wife died a horrible death of a disease, breast cancer. And so, how do I know those two? Yahweh had rejected them. But they were nothing but just Adventists, is all they were. They were just Adventist leaders of what they call the Branch Davidians. They call themselves the Branch. Out of season, out of order. Well, Rose Johnson did the same thing. He died a horrible death after he was maimed for 10 years. Thus the time and the condition of the church at the beginning of the seed of the 144,000 is well portrayed by both the Bible and Spirit of Prophecy. It is an admitted fact among Seventh-day Adventists that the church has been on the decline for some years, but never has it been in such a low spiritual condition as it is now. There is scarcely any difference now between the church and the world. Okay. Well, this brings the info statistics to our contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archives. We're going to close now with a song. The old rugged cross on a hill far away stood an old rugged cross, the emblem of suffering and shame. And I love that old cross where the dearest and best a world of loss and earth was slain. So I cherish the old rugged cross till my trophies at last I lay down. But cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday. Oh, that old rugged cross, so despised by the world, is a wondrous attraction for me. For the dear Lamb of God lifts His glory above to bear it to God Calvary. So I cherish the old rugged cross till my trophies at last are laid down. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown. And the old rugged cross, stained with blood so divine, the wondrous beauty I see. For 'twas on that old cross, Yahshua suffered and died, to pardon and sanctify me. So I cherish the old rugged cross, and my trophies at last I lay down. I will bring to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown. To the old rugged cross I will ever be true, his shame every cross gladly bear. He'll call me someday in my home far away, where his glory forever I'll share. So I cherish the old rugged cross, till my trophies at last I lay down. To look into the old rugged cross and exchange it someday.